Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Pixel Drone Show, our weekly podcast where we talk to people who do awesome and cool things with drones. And today, unfortunately, we don't have Kara Murphy joining us. Her daughter didn't feel well, so it's just Greg Reverdio and I. And we're talking to a fellow Dutchman, Thomas Brinkman, who's big into drones and not too long ago started AirHub. And he's our guest. We're going to talk with him because they have developed an app that basically allows you to fly DJI drones without any risk of data being sent overseas. And I think that's a very interesting topic. So we'll definitely get into that. But before we do all that, Thomas, welcome to the show. I know it's almost weekend in the Netherlands, so time for a beer perhaps. And yeah, I appreciate you joining us right late on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's cool to be on the show.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, we're going to dive right in. Can you maybe do a short introduction about yourself and how you got started with drones? And then we'll get into how you got started with AirHub afterwards as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So my name is Thomas. I'm a serial entrepreneur. AirHub is my second company. Before this, I had a mobile payment company called MyOrder. I did that for 10 years and sold my company to Rabobank. That's the biggest bank here in the Netherlands. And I was always flying with drones. Making pictures. I had the first DJI Phantom series and moved on to every new model. And yeah, drones had unlimited possibilities. And then I met a guy called Stefan van Vuren. He was a Airbus pilot. And when we came together, we had this idea, okay, let's start a company with drones. And that is the starting of AirHub.
That's pretty awesome. And how long ago did that get started, AirHub?
Yeah, we started in 2017. So we're already working for 5 years now on the AirHub software.
So you wanted to do something with drone. What gave you the idea specifically of talking about of creating an app that would work with DJI drones and do specifically what it does now?
Yeah, so we were really enthusiastic about drones, but we encountered that a lot of companies that wanted to use drones, they face a lot of difficulties. So there are, of course, a lot of rules involved. It's actually aviation as you start with the drones as a company. And what we wanted to do with our software solution is just to make it as easy as possible for companies to set up efficient, legal drone operations. So we started with an app, very simple, that shows you all the restrictions in your area. So if you open the AirHub app, the first AirHub app in 2017, you can have a good overview of all the restrictions, the NOTAMs, the CTRs, all this information. And that's actually really appreciated by users. And from that first MVP, we started to add a logbook so that also the companies could log their flights, which is of course a very important thing. And then we efficiently start adding functionalities to the platform. And now it's a full drone operation center where you can even control, plan, and execute all your flights from our apps and also from our desktop dashboard app.
So here in the United States, we have the FAA. They have supplied us with an app somewhat similarly. Wasn't always super user friendly, especially not back in 2017. There's also a few other companies here in the United States that provide those kind of services. How was that in the Netherlands and in Europe? Were there no other companies that already provided those kind of platforms for people?
Not really. Yeah, there were some websites, but they were not really friendly. So we really made a dedicated app for it. So that was really a USP for a lot of people using the AirHub platform. So that was all website-based. So you had to go to only a website was really only available for a desktop. So if you wanted to check on your location, you need to go with your mobile phone to a desktop website that doesn't work too well. So that was really something that we saw. And what we also encountered when we started with AirHub, we did a lot of interviews with companies who use drones, and we asked them, okay, how do you prepare your flights? How do you log them? And what we found out is that a lot of companies were using Excel to log their flights and using papers and pencils to prepare their flights. And we thought, okay, that's also something we can get digital. So we added the draw tool so that you can draw your geofence where you're going to conduct the flight. You add your team members digitally. And then we create really a digital logbook. So that's, we really focused on, okay, what are the issues that these companies have? And let's make it more easy to use with our app. And that, a lot of companies like that. And And we now have around 11,000 users monthly who use our tools to prepare and log and execute all their drone flights.
Actually, you mentioned having all of the regulations in one location in the app. This is something that I think we've been struggling in the United States, primarily because local regulation is very difficult to come by. And I was wondering, how did you guys tackle this issue in Europe? Because I know, first off, you have different countries. I'm assuming your app was available in different countries and probably different local regulation as well. How did that play out to keep that database up to date?
And that is still an issue. So in Holland, in the Netherlands, we have it covered correctly because we use several data sources for it. So, but it's a lot of work to make it specific work in every country. But we use certain providers. So we have an integration, for example, with AirMap. So they provide us all the data for the United States for all the restrictions in the airspace. We have an integration with Altitude Angel, but also with some local players. So in Holland, we have a connection with Aired, and they provide us all the data for the Dutch no dumps, for example, because sometimes they are not really displayed well in Altitude Angel as well. It's just a big circle, but you wanted more detail. Now, Aired is a company in Holland who provides us with the right information for NOTAM, for example. And that's what we're searching for in every country, to make connections with the right provider so that we have in our app the accurate information.
So in the United States, from where I live, if I drive, let's say, 3, 4, 5 hours westwards, I'm probably still in the Northwest, I'll still be in New York State. If you drive 3, 4, 5 hours from the Netherlands, you're going to be in Germany, France. There's all kinds of countries where you might end up in that time span. In what countries is your app proficient that it has all the information, all the rules, regulations, and that a, let's say, more internationally oriented drone pilot can just travel, fly the drone in Spain, use your app, fly your drone in Italy, use your app? Yeah, what countries do you cover?
So we got, of course, Holland, the Netherlands is completely covered. That's correct. We're working actually with Altitude Angel. We made some really progress. So actually in most of the European countries, and that's also where we focus on, really on Europe, in most European countries, all the data is in there. And in some cases, we have some pilots who want specific information about some obstacle data set, and then we'll get that obstacle data set from their end, and then we implement it. But I can say in Europe, you can use the Arab app, and all the data is correctly shown for the drone operators.
Oh, I was just gonna ask. You guys do all the programming in house. I'm guessing you have a team of programmers. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a team of now 10 developers. So we have iOS developer, Android developer, two backend developers, and front-end developers for our drone operations center. And our drone operations center, so we have the ground control apps. Maybe it's interesting to tell a little bit more about that. So we have the ground control apps. So these are the apps for mostly used by first responders who are, when they drive to an incident, they use our apps to prepare their mission, because it really, it's about seconds, so you really want to quickly prepare your mission. You want to know if there's a NOTAM, what the weather conditions like. You want to make sure that you can connect our app with the DJI drone or another type of drone, and then you can conduct a mission. So this is for iOS, for Android, and also for the smart controllers. We made dedicated apps for that. And we have built a dashboard web app, and that's our drone operations center, and that's a tool where you can prepare flights in detail, but also execute flights. So from this drone operations center, it's also in some cases connected to drones in box systems. So then you can plan and execute your drone flight straight from the office with our drone operations center. So these are the two most important software products that we have in market today.
So it sounds like a big goal of what you guys were trying to achieve is to make it a lot more user-friendly, right? For drone pilots to manage and prepare their flights and also track maintenance on their drones, perhaps.
Correct.
Does it run on iOS and Android?
Yeah, so it's on iOS and Android for the ground control apps, and the web app is a web-based application.
How about smart controllers? Because that's always a question we get from our students. Does this app also transfer to a smart controller?
Yeah, so that's our Android version. And our Android version is also optimized for smart controllers. So we made a dedicated APK file. So you can download that on your smart controller. And we customize it per drone. So the issue with the smart controller is, of course, the DJI smart controller works for an M300, but also for a Mavic 2 Enterprise or Advanced.
Yeah.
But every drone has different settings for the smart controller. So that's a lot of our time is spent on optimizing our smart controller app for the specific drone. So for an M300, you got a lot of different payloads. So you need to make sure that all the buttons for that payload are also in our smart control app. So, and that's a lot of work, but our clients really want to fly with our app instead of the DJI app. So for us, it's very important that we have a smart control app. That's our most important and most used app.
Yeah. Wow. We talked about your app on the show last week. I have a weekly Friday news update, and Haya was on the show talking about the app. And we got a lot of feedback, actually a lot of questions from customers. So I wrote them down throughout our list, and I'll be asking. But this was one of the questions that that one of our followers had asked was, do you have to wait for the SDK before you can do anything in the app for a specific drone, like the DJI Mavic 3, for example, that just came out? And we know the SDK is not out yet. So is that not compatible at the moment?
Yeah, that's correct. So that's not compatible at the moment. Same goes now for the Air 2S that's coming up. That should have launched in the 3rd of December, but that's probably postponed. So we're now working on the Air 2 as well. So yeah, that's something that's a little bit of an issue for us. Of course, the SDK needs to be updated constantly when new drone models are released by DJI. But we have for our customers a good list what drones are supported with our application.
So the reason we had you guys in the new show, of course, was based on your press release that your app now allows you to fly DJI drones without any risk of any data being transmitted anywhere, specifically China. This whole fear of data leaking to China started in the US a couple of years ago. From reading information on your side, I understand that something similar took place in the Netherlands. Can you kind of talk us through what happened in the last couple of years and what brought you guys to changing the app so that people can fly while keeping their data safe?
Yeah, so what happened here is that, of course, most of our clients use DJI. So that's the number one drone tool because they have the best hardware for the best price. So all the most governmental organizations here in the Netherlands, they use DJI. But in October, there was an investigation by a couple of news outlets that did an in-depth study on DJI and what happens with data. And what they claimed was that the drones of the police force and the customs and the fire department, these drones are DJI, and that the claim was that this data and all the images and the GPS locations of those drones will be sent to China, all this information. And this article got a lot of traction, and there were even questions in parliament about this topic. Now, most of these companies, most of these organizations like customs and fire department that are clients of ours, so they use also our tools to fly with, and they ask us, okay, what's going on? Because this article just did a massive claim, DJI is not safe, DJI is for Chinese government, it's a lot of claims. What's the issue here? So what we did with our team is really did an in-depth study of, okay, what happens with DJI? Is it really sending out a lot of data? Is it really a risk? So we made a really good insight and analysis of what is going on. And they asked us, okay, can you provide us with a solution that we can block this so that we can be secure when we're flying that not our data is sent out? So that's what we've done. We have our own, of course, like I explained, we have our own ground control apps. So these are based on the software development kit of DJI. So we have our own app where you can control the DJI drones with. So we have really AirHub software that controls the hardware of DJI. And what we've done, we've added a secure data mode. So this is actually a VPN, a virtual private network, that you install on the device that you're flying with. So in case you're flying with a Phantom 4 with an iPad, on this iPad is the Arup app. You can activate secure data mode. Then a VPN is installed, so the virtual private network is installed. And this blocks all outgoing data except the data to our AirHub server for video streaming, unlocking geofences and airspace information. So in this way, we can guarantee to these companies that they can still use the DJI hardware, but that we block all outgoing data, because there are, of course, these drones, of course, send out data to DJI, and DJI is China-based, so of course there is data sent to China, but in this case, we block it with our solution. And that's well received here in the Netherlands, and even now in Belgium. And we're talking with actually customers all over Europe since we've released this press release. That it's a hot topic, and everybody still wants to use DJI hardware because it's the best there is. But you want to do it in a safe, secure way. And this really is a solution that makes a lot of customers very happy that they can fly secure without security issues.
So I want to get back to the VPN eventually a little bit later down the conversation, because that was a question also that came from our audience. But I want to follow up on this data security and data leak that this newspaper may have found in the Netherlands. I guess the way that I hear you say what you're doing is you haven't necessarily found that there is a way. There is any kind of data that's unwanted that's being sent to China, but what you've decided to do is basically block any kind of data going back to China, just in case, just so that your customers feel secure. And that's what really your solution is providing, correct?
That's correct, yeah. So when we did our in-depth study, it's very obvious that that DJI sends back data to their servers.
Yep.
Every app is doing this. So if you use the Facebook app or WhatsApp, every app sends out data. And we see that there's a lot of traffic going out from the DJI Go and the DJI Go 4 app. They send a lot out a lot of data. We cannot see actually what is being sent, because it's really well encrypted. So you cannot really see easily what's being sent. But we thought, okay, if the issue is that there's data sent and we cannot really see what it is, let's just block it. And we tested it well, the drone still functions and works correctly. Let's just block it. And DJI has their own solution, local data mode, for this as well. Only the only issue when you activate local data mode from DJI is that video streaming doesn't work anymore, so your RTPM stream doesn't work anymore. And if you use local data mode from DJI, also, there is no more data anymore. Of course, it's called local data mode, but you also don't have any airspace information anymore. So your maps in your DJI app doesn't work anymore, and you cannot take off in geofences as well, because you cannot get authorization because you're in local data mode. So local data mode is an interesting option, but the problem is your drone doesn't work correctly anymore. It doesn't work full function.
So if people use your app and they want to make sure that all their data remains safe, is there any downside to doing that? I mean, do they lose any features or functionality in the drone or in the app that they normally would have used from DJI?
No, so we've built in all the same functionalities that DJI offers. The only issue is that it has to be supported in the SDK. So for instance, with the Mavic 3, that's just a new drone and the SDK is not supported, so we cannot make our app at this moment compatible with that app. So we are always a little bit behind DJI, because mm-hmm. we're still dependent on that they offer us the updates in the SDK.
So there was, you mentioned a local data mode, which is one of the options that DJI kind of came up with in order to get people to calm down a little bit about this. They also have what's called a government edition, or I don't remember the exact name what they have, but on some of the drones that they have a government mode kind of where no data goes at all outside at all. Have you guys been able to test that as well, or what's your thought on this mode and the downside possibly?
So what we found is that there are DJI governmental edition drones. So there are drones that are really for governments and that everything should be secure in these governmental edition drones. The only problem is that none of our clients have these governmental edition drones, and we cannot find out where to buy them in Europe. So maybe there are, maybe you can buy them in the States, but in Europe, we couldn't find out where you can buy them. So then the only solution that is left is the local data mode. But yeah, we just discussed that's not really a solution because that blocks all your functionality in your drone. So that's why we came up with this VPN profile to block all outgoing data.
Yeah, I think the government edition was done in partnership with the Department of the Interior, so it might not even be an edition that's actually available for sale for other entities, even if it's not government. I believe that the SDK for the Mavic 3 is going to come out this summer, or at least it's been planned, I believe, for this summer. So let's say, theoretically, July 1st, DJI announces that they have an SDK. How long would it take for you guys to catch up and basically make the Mavic 3 available through your app?
It takes us a couple of weeks. So it depends on all the functionality. So for instance, with this M300, it has a lot of functionality. So it takes a lot of time to build everything in. But what we always do is we talk with our top 10 clients who use these DJI drones, and then we ask them a list of the most important functionalities. So for instance, in DJI apps, you can still do a lot of settings. So there are a lot of possibilities with settings. We do not have to copy all these functionalities because you can just set those settings once in DJI app, and when you're gonna fly, you just use the Arab app. But in a couple of weeks, we can make sure that also the Mavic 3 works completely with the Arab app.
So how many companies currently are using your app, and then what kind of customers do you have using this? Is this government? Is this private entities, large companies, small companies, individual users?
Yeah. So I think our most important clients are first responders. So these are governmental organizations like the fire department, customs, the Coast Guard. So this is really what we're focusing on, to make a solution to really efficiently plan and execute your missions very quickly, but do it in the right manner so that it's always legal, that you plan, you have your team set up, you have your checklist there, you have a good video stream, it's with secure data mode. So this is really our focus. But we have around 11,000 active users monthly, but yeah, most of the companies that are first responders in Europe, so that's our main focus.
Are the requests that you get from customers in terms of features very different from customer to customer? I mean, I can imagine if you work with, let's say, a police force or maybe even military or something, that they might come with different questions and requests to you than some of the other customers.
So for all the first responders, security mode is very important. But we also have customers that use our app in the inspection and maintenance sector. But they really have different questions, and that's why we really focus on first, okay, we want to make a perfect solution for first responders, and then go to the next category like maintenance and inspection. Because in maintenance and inspection, for example, planning is very important, so that you can prepare and plan your flight in detail. And we're working on this in our drone operations center, that you can really plan in detail your drone mission and then send it to a ground control app, and or even execute the mission straight from our dashboard. But these are really different demands than a first responder, because a first responder doesn't want to plan anything. They just want to have the drone up in the sky in a couple of seconds, but do it in a legal manner. So per sector, it's different demands.
So am I understanding correctly that the app is currently available in the United States for US customers?
Yeah. Well, we do not focus, and we do not have active sales in the States, but you can use it in the States. And we have AirMap as the provider for all the air.
I'm, I'm sure you'll have more customers after this show. As a follow-up, obviously in the US, we've been very picky about where the data is going. Right now it's going west of us. In this case, it would be going east of us, still overseas or over ocean. And would there be a possible way for that VPN to remain in the United States rather than, again, going to a different country than the United States?
Yeah, so we're now in talks with some government organizations, police departments in different countries here in Europe. And what they ask us as well is, Arup saves everything on servers in Amsterdam. So we have our private cloud here in Amsterdam, but they want it in their own country. So what we now are also offering, but it comes at the price, is on-premise. So that we give a copy of our complete software package, and then they can install it on their own environment, on their own machines, on their own server, and then they have everything under their own control. But it comes at a price, because then they need to be trained, and we need to have an implementation manager and a support manager to support them constantly, because if there are updates or patches or anything, then we need to support it. But we're preparing now with the first customer who's going to use it on premise, so that they have everything on their own server.
I'm sure your data security is top notch. Are you worried when the customer wants to do this in house that the data could more easily be compromised and be accessed to by bad actors?
Yeah, that is a risk. So that's also in our service level agreement, where we make the contracts with these companies. Then takes 2 months. We do an in-depth study in what do they have there. We really make a good overview of their environment, and then our implementation manager is going to set it up in their system. And in the contract, it really states that it's their responsibility, because we cannot be held accountable for their system security, because we do not have any control over this. But this is exactly the topic that we are discussing with these clients about this.
I think, especially if you were to have plans to enter the United States market, liability might be something that you want to make sure you got covered for sure. I'm wondering, who's your competition? I mean, are there any other apps that offer similar functionality as to what you offer?
Yeah, so in the United States, of course, we have Skyward, that's bought by Verizon. So that's a company that we always are tracking what they're doing. Aloft, also in the United States, is a company that we keep track of. In Europe, you have some small competitors, but they're really really small at this moment. So in Europe, it's really, I think we're the market leader for this first responder solution but also the ground control apps for the smart controller, iOS and Android.
So in terms of your marketing strategy, I mean, are you guys focused mostly on the European market, since it sounds like there's so much untapped potential still there?
Yeah, that's correct. So we really focus on the European market.
And are you guys self-funded, or do you have investors behind AeroHub that help you guys grow faster?
No, at this moment we're self-funded. So like I mentioned in the beginning, in my introduction, this is my second company. So MyOrder, a mobile payment company that I sold. Actually, we have the same team now, with not all of them, but because MyOrder was a little bit bigger. MyOrder was around 50 people when I sold it to Rabobank. But the top developers are now in the AeroHub team. And that's how we funded ourselves. So and we make a lot of revenue, but we also do consultancy. So my partner, who I founded the company together with, Stefan van Vuren, he was a former Airbus pilot. He's doing also consultancy from Arup, and that's also how we make money. That's how we in the beginning get our first money and cash flow going, is by consulting.
That's awesome that you guys are able to get started with your own resources like that.
So is one of the questions that we did get quite a bit on the comments when we posted about this was, is the drone still geofenced, and do you have the ability to go through and get approval within your app to unlock the drone in a geofenced zone?
Yeah, so in the software development kit, there is the possibility to unlock geofences. And that is possible also in the secure data mode. So this is something that we're heavily testing now with clients in CTRs. And sometimes it still gives issues, but we have now for iOS the first solution that we can unlock geofences even when you have secure data mode activated.
So you are the ones doing the unlock. You're not going through DJI to get this unlock done. Is that correct?
So the unlocking is possible via the software development kit of DJI.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. This is obviously a major issue in the United States with people not always agreeing with the fact that DJI is an extra level of approval when we already have a government approval. So I think this will be very interesting to our users.
Yeah.
Hang on, let me just make sure that I understand it correctly. I mean, if you want to unlock a DJI drone in and you're using your app, do you still require a connection to DJI and ask them for approval to unlock that drone?
Yeah, you do still need to access. So via the software development kit, you still need approval via DJI to get the unlocking.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you're still dependent on DJI responding to that and unlocking your drone in the end.
Yeah, and we are trying to figure out if it's possible even to take a detour. Because if you think about it, it's actually very strange that DJI decides if you can fly your drone on a certain location. Crazy. You don't make up the rules in that country. You bought the hardware, you bought the drones, and they decide if you can use it or not. So we're trying and figuring out if there is something that you can undo this. But for now, you still need approval via the SDK of DJI.
Yeah, I think that there's a debate that's going on, and I think it's going to go on as long as DJI has this geofencing going on. I think there's a positive to it. It's the person that just bought the brand new drone that's never flown before, pulls it out of the box and turns it on, and then all of a sudden DJI says, wait a minute, you're not in a place where you should be flying. That's great. That is absolutely great. Now you've got somebody who's been flying for 5 or 6 years that's part 107 certified, that knows exactly what they're doing. They should not be required in this case to get approval from somebody else. So I think it's there's got to be a trade-off somewhere at one point, but I think it's going to be an ongoing discussion in the industry.
I mean, I think it makes sense that DJI came up with geofencing, since they were selling so many drones so quickly to a lot of hobbyist drone pilots. So it was a way to mitigate risk. I get that. But I think you're right when you say that, let's say, if you take the United States and you have aviation and drone regulations here in this country, that you have to go outside of the country to get approval to fly a drone within this country in this airspace with these rules. It doesn't make any sense if you look at it from that point of view. And I think maybe ultimately geofencing should be something that's controlled and managed by, let's say, the FAA and not by a drone manufacturer. Yeah. Anyway, earlier on in our conversation, you mentioned that you guys have a subscription service for your app. Can you tell us a little bit about how the pricing works for that subscription?
Yeah, so we have three models. So we have the free subscription. So it's actually no subscription, of course, but it's for free. And then you can just check the weather, see all the limitations. You can set up a flight plan, just as a personal pilot, so you can use it. As soon as you will start in a team, then you go to our enterprise model. And in this way, you can set up a team flight, get video streaming so that the guys in the office can also see the video image that the drone takes. And we have a pilot plan, and the pilot plan is the cheapest subscription, that's €10 a month. And then you have all the functionalities except the team functionalities.
So $10 a month for an individual pilot to be able to use your app, basically.
Correct. And then you have all the functionalities that are available in the app.
So in the US, we've seen a movement to to try to get away from purchasing DJI drones, and that's called S Blue UAS, and Blue SUAS. And is there something similar that you're seeing in Europe where the countries might want to keep the manufacturing and the developing more internal rather than go to a different country like China to get their drones? Is this something that you've seen as well? You feel is coming?
There is a little bit discussion about this. So of course, with the DJI issues raised last year, there is this debate. But then, if you really go into detail in other drone manufacturers, these are not that good and are not able to compete yet with the DJI drone. Yeah. And certainly with the price. So Well, what's interesting now and what we're also now integrating is the Parrot Anavi AI. So that's an interesting drone that we're connecting now, but yeah, it just came out. But what we see is that most of our clients are really enthusiastic about DJI and the drones. So in Europe, there is not really an other manufacturer that even comes close to the DJI drones. No.
So In our conversations with other people here in the drone industry in the United States, the feedback that we got is that when you look at Blue SUAS, there's three problems basically. One is these drones are significantly more expensive. Yeah. Two, they typically don't offer the same features and the same ability. So the specs are typically less than what you would get elsewhere. And thirdly, which is also important, is they can't deliver those kind of drones in the same quantities as some government organizations need. No. Like, they're not buying one or two drones, are buying 2,000 drones, and if you can't get them, then it doesn't matter that these drones are supposedly safer. Would you argue that the Blue SUAS approach, where you focus basically on the hardware, is not the right approach, and that's your approach, where you do it through software, and therefore allowing you to still use DJI drones, is the better approach in this case?
I think for now it's a better approach because, of course, now a lot of companies already invested heavily in DJI hardware. Yeah, it's a waste of money if you just say okay, out with DJI, because the issue is not in the hardware; it's in the software, because the software is creating all these security risks. So do something about the software. So that's what we did. We make our own DJI control app based on their SDK, put some very good security around it. And then you have a good solution. I think that's a better approach than just blocking everything and don't use the hardware from DJI anymore. No.
Yeah, I agree.
I think this is something that a lot of people miss. What you just said right here is that the issue is not so much in the hardware. You could have a drone with entirely Chinese parts, but if the software talks to the right parties, then it's no longer an issue. So I'm glad you mentioned that. You mentioned that you're working with Parrot and their NFE AI. Are you working with other brands right now? Are you pretty well open, or is it really focused on DJI drones?
No, we're well open. We want to be an agnostic platform. So our goal is really for if organizations use the Arab software, it should work with everything. So we have made integrations with boxes. So we have a connection with a Dutch company called Mapshare AI. They have a really good drone in a box solution. So we have made an integration that you can use it on our platform, because when a drone operator or remote controller wants to operate drones, he wants to use one interface and then access all the drones. Because if, for instance, the police department is using DJI, Parrot Anavi, SkyDio, a drone in a box solution, and Vital fixed wing drones, and they have all these different softwares to manage these drones, then you have log files all over the place, maintenance items all over the place, checklists there that are not up to date, you have no overview over your team. So what we've did is really make one great interface that's really user friendly and connect all these boxes and all these drones. So at this moment we have 6 integrations, if there are new drones coming in the market or new box manufacturers, we are we really love to all connect them all so that we can offer these solutions to our clients.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned this because we were talking to Bobby Watts, who's a who owns Watt Innovations here in the U.S. and he builds American drones at a smaller scale, mm-hmm. but larger drones. And he had mentioned Otarian as a company that's kind of working on what you're talking about, which is a solution where somebody can go in there. Are you guys talking to Otarian? We know Romeo pretty well. He was on the show, and he's a friend of ours. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, we are in contact with Otarian. And we are also integrating now the first. It's called Avi. I don't know if you are familiar with Avi. Yeah. Avi is a VTOL fixed wing drone, and we're now also making an integration with this VTOL fixed wing drone, and it's connected to ground control with a muffling protocol with PX4. So, and Otarian is of course the manufacturer of this software. So we're making the integration in that system as well, so that you can use those types of drones also in our platform.
Awesome, that's great to hear.
Yeah.
So this show is probably going to go live next Tuesday. I would imagine a lot of people are going to listen to it because the data security issue with DJI drones is quite a big one here in the United mm-hmm. States. So let's imagine the awesome thing is going to happen and you guys are going to get all these emails and phone calls from companies in the US that want to work with you. How would you tackle that if you get 10, 20? I mean, I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but let's say if it were to happen, how would you guys deal with that entering the United States market?
That will be fantastic, of course. We have a inbound sales team now who is supporting everybody. So if, in Europe mostly, of course, now. But yeah, if there's a lot of demand from the States, yeah, we will support them as well. So we will. We already have the integration with AirMap, so we have the information about the airspace. You can actually use most functionalities also in the States. So we were happy to support them and they can use our platform there.
So you're not too afraid, let's say, if such a scenario were to play out, you guys are pretty much ready to come overseas.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Awesome. Good. Next question. So you have all these different drone manufacturers like Watts Innovations, Avi, the Dutch company with the fixed wings drones that you just mentioned. You have FreeFly Systems. Mm-hmm. How large of a user group does a particular drone model need to have for you guys to make it interesting to develop and incorporate that specific drone model into your platform?
Yeah, so it mostly actually, it always starts with the end user. So for us, it's of course very important if we make an integration that there's a client who's going to use it. Otherwise, yeah, it's nice to make integrations, but we have a policy that we also always want to have a launching customer. Otherwise, we do not make the integration. So if it comes with a customer, we make the integration. That's actually how we do it, how we work.
I want to switch gears and I want to talk about, you know, kind of the industry and make it's pretty rare that we have people from a different country, so we can talk about the differences between a different country, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. But here in the U.S., we've seen a push for LANTS, which was the approval to fly in the airspace and controlled airspace. Then the FAA started working on remote ID, which is kind of the latest and greatest thing in regulation that we've had. And then now the FAA is working on beyond visual line of sight, which is kind of mm-hmm. their central focus. What are you seeing in Europe as a trend, as a hot topic, and something that is on your mind? For the drone industry?
Yeah, of course, BVLOS flights are very important. Of course, that's going to make the whole potential of drones in boxes is only going to work when you have BVLOS possibilities. So that's, of course, very important. But there are still a lot of struggles and the regulation is not ready for it. In Germany, I read today that it's now possible to do it on a controlled ground zone, so that's interesting. Yeah. In Holland, you have now a couple of test sites where you can do BVLOS missions, but still very small. Of course, that's gonna come up in the upcoming years, but more what's very interesting upcoming is, of course, also the LANTS in Europe. So we're now testing with Altitude Angel. It's in Europe it's called U-Space. So UTM Altitude Angel has made it, or is the provider now for air traffic control here in the Netherlands, and we're now implementing their service that we can send a flight approval straight from our app to air traffic control, and that air traffic control can see the drones who are connected to AirHub. So, and this is something that we're going to test in August this year, together with Ehang also, Ehang drone. So yeah, it's going to be the first urban air mobility flight combined with, it's going to be a scenario with five different drones in our AirHub platform, and then we're going to connect them all to U-Space here in the Netherlands. So U-Space is of course very important, and that will make it more easy to do drone missions, drone flights in the CTR. So yeah, these two are, I think, U-Space and BVLOS are the most important topics, but yeah, it goes step by step. It's not that quick, but it's yeah, very interesting to see what's happening.
So here in the United States, you have the Federal Aviation Administration, the government body that regulates airspace and comes up with the drone regulations. What we found here is that the drone industry is moving at such a rapid pace, and they come up with all these new features, and then you have users coming up with new use cases and applications for these drones, that the FAA has a very hard time keeping up. So their regulations are always one, if not two steps behind. The one benefit that we do have here in the United States is that it's one country, so we have one set of rules in that sense. In Europe, having so many different countries and so many different governing bodies, like, what's happening there, and how much of an issue is that for companies like you who want to push forward and yeah, make drones be able to do all these other
Yeah, it's the same here, and what makes it more complex is, of course, that you have all these different countries. You do have European regulations around drones now that are active from this since the beginning of this year. So it is improving. So we went also in Europe from rule-based to risk-based. But you still see that the authorities are slow because they are not. The industry is moving exactly as what you mentioned is going so quickly, and new use cases are being thought of every day that they can't keep up with it. What we did here on this topic specifically here in Holland is that as AirHub we founded the Dutch Drone Delta. That's a foundation exactly for this problem. But because what we saw here in the Netherlands is that we are not going quick enough to keep up with the rest of the world. So what we saw here in the Netherlands, everything is slow. Our government doesn't understand this. So what we've done is created this foundation, and we asked the biggest companies here in Holland. So Schiphol, so that's the airport. We asked the port of Rotterdam, that's the main port, biggest port in almost in the world. We asked KLM, the airliner. We asked a telco, KPN. So we asked 16 huge companies, okay, let's start this foundation and let's get a common goal to create urban air mobility as a new way of mobility for the future, because all these companies will benefit eventually when urban air mobility is going to exist. And when we and now with this foundation called Dutch Drone Delta, we have all these companies together. We do all sorts of tests around remote ID, around BVLOS, social acceptance, long distance flights. And what you see here now is that the government is really listening to these big companies, because all the big companies have the same goal. They have authority, they have a business plan behind it, a straight goal where they want to be in the upcoming 5 to 6, 7 years. And now the government is really asking, okay, what's the most important thing that we should work on? How can we improve? How can we make regulation that really works for you? And this in this way is now really getting up to speed, that we have a lot of good collaboration now with the government and with the regulator to improve this whole ecosystem around drones, with the ultimate goal of urban air mobility. But what you see is when we work on urban air mobility as a goal, the whole drone industry is benefiting from this innovation.
Yeah, that makes sense. About a year and a half ago, I was talking to my longtime friend, Mark Gellers. He was the CEO of Unifly in Belgium. And and it seemed like at the time they were pretty far ahead of the game in Europe, doing something similar with integration of airspace. And do you see any countries in Europe that are kind of leading the charge right now on this in terms of innovation and being ahead of the game?
You know, you see something in the UK is pretty, where Altitude Angel is also based in the UK. There's more activity. We see more drone, more use cases. Israel, there's a lot of going on. We have this interesting company called Airways, also a UTM provider. They are, what I saw, but of course it's all videos, but what I saw on the videos is that they have really, this whole lens concept is really working there with really cool deconfliction AI models that if the drones are in the same path, they have a really quick AI engine that deconflicts it and creates a new route. So that was really impressive. Yeah, I think the UK and Israel are in the most leading now.
So you have Zipline, the fixed-wing drone delivery company. They are officially a US-based company, but they took all their operations into Africa. And one of the big reasons there was, one, the logistical problems there were much greater, so the benefit of drone delivery was more obvious. But another big part was a lot of these African countries had a airspace that was less busy, but also less developed in terms of regulations. Yep. Do you see that? Do you think that those countries that are, let's say, behind in certain ways in terms of airspace usage might actually have a benefit when it comes to using drones, because it's just so much easier to do drone missions there than, let's say, in the Netherlands or in the New York area, for instance?
Yeah, I think that's AV as well. So AV, the Dutch company, also did that in Africa, most of their flights. Of course, the it's way more easy to set up a drone operation there, and I think a lot of the benefits are even bigger there. Actually, it's the same with mobile payments and also with the mobile phones. So they don't, mobile payments is really big in Africa, even bigger than I think in still in Europe. And the same goes for drones. Yeah.
Do you guys have any plans, or is there anything happening that might draw your company into those regions of the world?
No, we're really focusing on Europe, and for us, the delivery use case is interesting, but it's too complex still here in Europe. We did our first pilot also in combination with the Dutch Drone Delta Foundation in Amsterdam, together with Takeaway, Just Eat Takeaway, and we did it in Amsterdam. We flew over the River Eye, and it was very interesting, but to really connect it from door to door food delivery, that's really still complex. So what you see now also in Holland is the first medical drone delivery, so that makes sense. But before that comes at a large scale, it will take, I think, probably 3 or 4 years. So when drone delivery is more mature, we will also focus on that vertical. Yeah. But for now, our focus is really on the vertical of first responders. And yeah, there are a lot of first responders are using drones, so we have the perfect solution for them.
Which of those use cases do you think has the most immediate and obvious benefit? I mean, delivering coffee from Starbucks by drone, I'm not sure if that's the one, but which one do you think has the most potential to actually become a real life application?
Well, medical. I think medical is the most high priority, high value. So that's, I think, the first one that will, the business case will work. But also for food, it is interesting when there is a high demand and it's hard to reach. So in what we saw in Amsterdam, what was interesting is that in Amsterdam North, there's a River Eye going straight through Amsterdam, and the restaurants in Amsterdam city center cannot deliver their food in North. So they have to cross the River Eye, and they don't, so the people in Amsterdam North cannot get those pizzas from Domino's, for example. And then a drone is a very interesting tool if you have two distribution centers at parts of the eye, and then a drone is just flying back and forward, then you have a great solution. And I think the business case will also work, but regulations is still a little bit of an issue there.
Yeah, poor people on the other side of the river. thank you so much for your time. I think we're pretty much coming up to an hour. It's been super informative, so it was that was really good. We always have one last question, and that's what is your favorite drone to fly?
My favorite drone to fly? I mostly fly with the DJI Enterprise, Dual Enterprise. That's my favorite drone now that I use the most. It's really good to use. It's as the thermal cam. Yeah. That's the perfect one for us. Most of our clients use it as well, so that's why.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I want to thank you, because this has been an amazing conversation. These are the topics that I love. I love the airspace integration. I think this is something that everybody should be aware of, and how this is going to work in the future. And then especially this DJI, it's pretty hot topic at the moment. So I really want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us. This has been an amazing conversation.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Thomas, thank you for being with us today. I hope that you will get all those emails and phone calls starting next Tuesday. That will be amazing. Thank you. And for all the people listening and or watching our show, if you want to learn more about AirHub, then go to airhub.app. That's their website. You can find out all the information. We'll make sure to put links and contact information in the description of the show below. And of course, if you enjoyed watching and listening to the show, please be sure to share it with friends and family. I mean, the more we can grow our audience, the better able we are to get you interesting guests like Thomas to listen to. So thank you. This show is going to air on Tuesday morning, as we always do. And other than that, we'll see you for the next episode of the Pixel Drone Show.